Welcome to Detoxicity, by men, about men, for everyone. This is a podcast that's attempting to remix the narrative around masculinity, and I thank you for listening and supporting. If you're new to the podcast, I hope you check out the archive, which contains over 150 episodes. I'm always happy when someone reaches out with a friendly word or constructive criticism, so never hesitate to hit me up either via IG at DetoxPodGuy or via email, detoxpod@gmail.com. You can also contact me if you're interested in being a guest on the show or if you know someone who might be a good guest for the show. There's also a Detoxicity Patreon. Patrons get episodes 1 week early, plus I will mail you a cool DetoxPod fridge magnet. Go to bit.ly/DetoxPodPlus to find out more. Oh, one more thing. Late last year, I completed my certification courses and I am now a life and relationship coach. I'm taking clients. Go to mike-joseph.com and book a free consultation. Thanks for listening. I really do appreciate you. So we're closing in on 170 episodes of Detoxicity, and I've interviewed quite a few people two times at this point. I'd say maybe 10 to 12 people have been on this show twice. There are only two people who have been on this show more than twice. Dylan Thomas is one. He has been on the show four times. And Kevin Patterson is now making his fourth appearance on Detoxicity. And I am always happy to have him. Kevin Patterson is based in Philadelphia. He is many things. He is an author. He wrote a book entitled Love's Not Colorblind, Race and Representation in Polyamorous and Other Alternative Communities. To me, it is the defining document for people who are looking to explore non-monogamy. Everyone should have it, and it doesn't even matter if you're poly or consensually non-monogamous. If you're monogamous, if you're black, if you're white, if you're straight, if you're gay, you should have a copy of this book, Love's Not Colorblind. He has also launched a sci-fi novel series, or co-launched, co-authored a series called For Hire. Kevin is a blurred. And as such, comics are and graphic novels are really important to him. And this graphic novel series centers characters of color, as well as other marginalized identities. You would think after four episodes, we would have nothing to say, but we talk about so many things in this conversation. We talk about self-discovery and, you know, how some people come into queerness or discover queerness later in life, as opposed to, you know, my experience, which has been that I've always been this way. We talk about, you know, geek culture. You know, nerd culture means different things to different people. But, you know, Kevin is a proud nerd, and being a nerd is kind of sexy to a lot of people at this point. Where in, you know, the 80s, it was kind of a slur, almost. We talk about open communication. We talk about hip-hop. And how in middle age, maybe some problematic lyrics and artists don't sit well with us. And Kevin also shares his thoughts on how to best plan an orgy. So there's a lot of ground covered, and Kevin is such a great conversationalist, and I appreciate the fact that he is taking the time to be on this show a fourth time. So everybody, without further ado, give it up. This is Kevin Patterson. I came into this with no agenda, no script, no prep, because we have done this like four times already.
Yeah, has it been four? I thought this was the fourth, but I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we'd already done it four times.
This might be the fourth. It's either the fourth or the fifth. Yeah. Either way, you're here, and I'm going to let you introduce yourself because I let all my guests introduce themselves. So for the fourth time, or fifth time maybe, who are you?
My name is Kevin Patterson. I'm the author of the award-winning book, Love's Not Colorblind, Race and Representation in Polyamorous and Other Alternate Communities. I am also the co-writer of the For Hire series of queer polyamorous superhero novels.
And it's always a pleasure to talk to you and always a pleasure to have you on the show. I see you're rocking the nails today.
Yeah. Around this time last week, I had an orgy, and I always get myself like styled up, because if I'm going to be putting my hands in people, I want people to know I take care of my hands.
So you didn't even just go for the manicure. You went for the manicure and the paint.
Yeah, I like the matte black finish on the nails. Like I like the way it looks.
I feel that. It's funny. This actually calls to mind a very specific thing, is that you and my homeboy Calvin, who y'all should absolutely meet at some point in life because y'all are black poly nerds.
Word.
From Brooklyn. But y'all were the first two brothers I saw who were straight identified at the time wearing fingernail polish. And that was a really important impetus for me to be like, I'm actually sucking dick. Why do I have this masculinity hang up about wearing nail polish? So I've been sans nail polish for a while now, but every once in a while I pull either the matte black or the black glitter nail polish out.
And I got to be honest with you, and you know this, I am not identifying as straight these days.
Well, right. This is at the time I met you 5, 6, 7 years ago. Yeah.
And I got to be honest, I'm annoyed by that. I spent 30 something years identifying very solidly, very honestly as straight. And I was good there. I felt very comfortable in my role as the unbothered straight guy, you know? And then all of a sudden, my attraction started opening up and I started finding more than just cis women attractive. And it's like, all right, this is cool and all. I'm glad I'm learning new things about myself. I'm glad that what was true is every person I know has that whole story. Oh, not every person, but I hear the very common queer story of I knew I was different at a young age. And for me, that just wasn't true. I had examined my sexuality in my teens and in my 20s, and I had always just landed very solidly on straight. And there was no, hidden gay porn anywhere. There was no attractions to a friend or coworker that I couldn't reconcile. Nothing like that. I was never in any closet. I was just a straight guy until I wasn't. But I had been so comfortable as the straight guy that now that I was like, well, I'm not going to flick a switch and try to be straight again, but I had it all set. I had it lined up. It was a good system. And now I'm doing something different.
Life throws interesting shit at you. And it certainly feels like you were always, as someone who is open-minded and questioning, I feel like that revelation or that coming to that conclusion or this part in your life doesn't feel as earth shattering as it would for somebody that has not previously done the work.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly that. And also I was in a very supportive nest, I should say, where by the time my attraction shifted away or not shifted away, but expanded to include more than just cisgender women, I was already surrounded by so many queer folks. I was already surrounded by so many polyamorous folks. There was no one who would have kept me in a closet by the time I figured it out. So I didn't have any adversity. There was no identity crisis or anything like that. I was just like, oh, wow, here's some new information about myself. And then when I started telling my partners, oh, hey, I'm starting to feel differently about things, everyone was like, oh, cool, cool, cool. So you're open to other threesomes now. What are you doing on Tuesday? Let's go. Hey, me and my boyfriend have been waiting for you to turn that corner. So what are you doing this weekend?
That is too funny. They were just sitting there biding their time. All right.
Yeah.
At some point, he's going to come around.
And you know what? My wife has gotten that comment a lot of times. There are so many people who I've dated who at one point or another, they were like, hey, whenever she gets a little gayer, let me know. Ha, ha, ha. And it was all a joke that we shared, but then it ended up being my reality once I turned that corner.
That's too funny. What's really interesting, and I don't think I'm speaking out of turn here, is that, two of the three conversations that we've had for this show have been group chats with two other gentlemen.
Yes.
And it seems like everybody except for me on that panel in the last 5 years has turned something of a corner with regards to being seen as a heterosexual person.
Yeah. It's funny how that works. And the other thing that annoys me about the whole process is that because I have so many queer friends who had to spend X amount of years in the closet, because I had so many friends who had to wait until they were out of their parents' house or had some level of identity crisis, it irks me when people say, well, I knew that about you before I knew. It's like, no, you didn't.
That's always the case, though. Yeah, anytime somebody comes out, there's always 10 people who are like, well, I knew before, blah, blah, blah. And no, you didn't.
Yeah. And I get it in the case of somebody who's clearly struggling with the closet, but I wasn't. I was very comfortable being a straight guy.
Right.
Yeah, for people to be like, oh, yeah, well, that was something I just sort of figured out about you. So come on, fam. Come on. If my story was a little bit different, maybe, you know, when I was in high school, right, they made us fill out a little card and then they would take your picture, shrink it down and turn it into your high school ID card. And so when I was filling out the form, and this is maybe like my junior or senior year, I fudged the numbers to make myself 18 because I knew nobody was really checking for it. So with that 18-year-old high school ID card, I was buying porn. I had unfiltered access to porn. Like whenever I got my allowance, my local video store had a little beaded curtain and they had the prestige stuff, $20 for such and such movie. But then they had like the bargain basement stuff. Yes,
the bullshit for $5.99.
Yeah. $5.99. It would be a VHS tape on long play. So you can get like three hours of whatever it was, compilations of Nina Hartley and Dominique Simone. And
you just turned my memory lock so far right? back.
Right? Asia Carrera and all of them. And so I had access to gay porn as well. It was a considerably smaller section, but it was there.
Right.
And I was never interested in it. That was the time when I was exploring my sexuality, when I was figuring things out, when I was buying porn under my parents' noses. That was the time where I would have been curious and experimenting. And it just was not there. Like, zero interest at all. So I understood what my sexuality was. It just changed. It just changed up under me.
What yeah. would you say to somebody who is in their 40s, in midlife, somewhere between like 40 and 60? Because I do think this happens a lot where just the way you feel about things just changes or expands or whatever the situation is. Who is struggling with that? Like the light is turned on and internally they get it, but they don't know what to do with it. What would you say to somebody in that situation?
I would say, one, nobody is grading you. That is a mindset. And I don't know how much of that is society in general, how much of that is Generation X, but just the idea that someone is grading me, that somebody is going to have a problem with this, somebody who has some manner of influence over me, you know, like there's going to be a parent or a teacher somewhere or an employer. Nobody's grading you. Nobody's grading you, you know? And then also you can find, especially now in the era of social media, you can find supportive people. They don't have to be your inner circle, you know? Like, I had a friend back in my hometown who was telling me, guys, don't check for me. I'm a little thicker. Guys aren't looking for me at all. And I'm sitting there thinking, A, I'm here to fuck you. And B, you would be one of the smaller people I am hooking up within this 6-month period. You know, there are people who are checking for you. You just need to find them too. The lawless wild lands of the internet, there's always people like, well, girls were only looking for 6-foot guys, or, you know, a lot of that is just you're trying to mix and match in the wrong direction.
Right.
You're looking for Skittles and they're looking for M&Ms and you're having a problem because all you find is the other thing. And it's like, no, just find your people, date them and be fine. Like, there was a point in my life, and like, I'm going to get old man on you here for a second.
Man, go ahead.
When I grew up as a kid in the 80s. I was born in 78. I was a kid of the 80s. I suffered through real backlash for being a geek, you know? Like, I dealt with actual bullies. I dealt with actual, like, women who were not interested in me, girls who were not interested in me because I was doing some geek shit. And eventually I was like, you know what? I just need to find them because they exist. And now as I get older, those same bullies are hitting me up on Facebook like, hey, Kev, I need some game recommendations. And while I don't know what's happened with any of those girls who aren't interested in me, I do know that there are more than enough who are interested in listening to me rant about random geeky nonsense. You know, the best-selling movies in the world right now are all geeky superhero movies, mm-hmm. and like Lord of the Rings and Dune, mm-hmm. you know? You can't tell me that it's hard to be a geek and find romance now.
Not at a time where
yeah.
No way.
It's so mainstream.
Yeah, I mean, I'm 2 years older than you. And
are you? Wow, I thought you were 3 years younger than me.
Nope, I'm 1976, baby.
Wow, look at your face.
Thank you. We know that black don't crack.
Yeah.
I lived through the 80s as well, and as a nerd. And it's so interesting to see how there's been a complete culture shift.
Yeah. Right?
Post-technological revolution. And it's funny because I think back to the lyric by a very problematic rapper where he talks about Dwayne Wayne turned into Dwayne Wade. And now...
Word.
Now it's like, you can be Dwayne Wayne or Dwayne Wade, yep. Or Dwayne Wayne and Dwayne Wade, and yep. You still get play.
Yeah. You know what I mean? With the glasses up, you're yep. Dwayne Wayne. With the glasses down, you're Dwayne Wade.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, so at this point, geeks not being able to find their people and find love and romance and sex with other geeks, like, a lot of that's y'all personality at this point.
Or they're still stuck in that Breakfast Club mentality.
Yeah.
Or whatever movie, 16 Candles or Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah, for keeps.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, wow. You pull the shit out the archive, Kevin.
I watched all those movies.
Damn.
Yeah, I grew up on all that Brat Pack, John Hughes stuff.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's really good to see examples of different types of people who are going through life and being confident and being successful. And you obviously run a platform and your IG handle is Poly Role Models. But I do really want to shout you out as a role model for myself. And for, I think, a lot of other similar people, for just being an example for, like, you were the first brother from Brooklyn that I met that was, like, a leader in the poly community.
Hey, thank you.
Shit to say. So my hat's off to you all the time.
I've got to apologize to you here. I don't refer to myself as a guy from Brooklyn. I was born in Brooklyn. I ain't mad about it, but, like...
Hey, you got Brooklyn swag.
Wow. Oh, okay. I've never heard that before, and I do appreciate that because I've grown up adjacent to Brooklyn swag enough to know that is a high compliment.
Yeah.
But I'm a Jersey boy.
That's fine.
I grew up in the shadow of New York, but not in the city proper.
Right. But still growing up in the tri-state area and West Indian on top of that.
True that.
So 10, 15 years ago, there wasn't really a lot of people like us.
Yeah.
Public facing. There were. But they weren't public facing. So I think you were one of the people who kind of kicked down the door in that respect.
Yeah. I know there was definitely a point in my life where I realized, and I wasn't the only one, because these are conversations that I've had with other folks. When I hear people being like, oh yeah, I'm into geeky guys, they weren't looking in my direction. They were looking at folks that looked like the Big Bang Theory, you know? And at some point I had to get right with that as well, where I was like, all right, well, there is somebody who's checking for me. Let me go find them.
And were there specific things that you did to find them besides just be like, hey, here's the internet, here's social media, here's this wide array of people?
I mean, I got lucky enough to just find a group of folk, find a friends who were not shitty. Like, yeah, we talk a little shit to one another, but the love is there, the support is always there. And I never have to worry about being surrounded by guys who hate women, you know? I never have to worry about feeling like I'm surrounded by guys who are trash talking women. Like, yeah, there's the whole locker room talk, bawdy conversations, you know, that kind of thing. But always with completely consenting co-stars, you know?
Sure.
Bawdy conversations about people where we know that the love and the respect are all there.
Right.
There's a trust there. And finding that, like, I went to Howard, which I say pretty frequently. But part of why I went to Howard, and there was a few different reasons, but part of it was away from my folks and it was away from my life. Like, I got accepted to go to Rutgers and I knew that so many people I went to high school with were going to be at Rutgers. I'm like, right. I don't want 4 more years of high school. I want to go somewhere where I can sort of feel like I could reinvent myself.
Right.
And what I ended up doing instead of reinventing myself was just getting comfortable with being who I am. I started adopting that whole idea that nobody's grading me. Outside of the classroom, nobody's grading me. I don't have to worry about how anybody feels about me. I can just be myself without having to feel like I've got to be disingenuous to make somebody like me. I just found people who understood me, to use more problematic rap lyrics.
Hey.
One of my favorite lines from Nas is mandatory. See that pussy, they handed to me. I got no game. It's just some bitches understand my story. And strip away the problematic aspects of that. I don't feel like I have any game. I'm just me, and some people are into it, and some people aren't, and that's cool too. I don't have to yell at anybody or be mad or talk trash to anybody that's not into me. It's fine. No harm, no foul. Somebody is, though.
Right. That's a level of confidence in yourself, belief in yourself, satisfaction with yourself that I think a lot of people are still searching for.
Yeah. As men, we get so much modeling. We get so much messaging that we're supposed to misrepresent ourselves or be dishonest in order to hook up with folks. And I don't get it. I don't understand it. It sounds exhausting, really.
I don't know if it's some virility shit or some level of conditioning. I mean, probably a combination.
Yeah.
And, you know, I struggle with this from time to time, understanding that everything is not for everyone. You are not for everyone, but there are people for you. And you don't have to be attractive to everybody the same way you are not attracted to everybody.
Yeah. I feel like my superpower really is I let a lot of stuff go. And I fight the right battles. I let a lot of the small stuff go. If somebody cancels the date on me, it's annoying, you know, it's disappointing. But then that gives me room to do so many other things. And I take the joy in, like, I got a date canceled tonight, but now I get to hop on the PlayStation and hang out with my friends. Or now I get some time to write. Or now I get some time to just smoke a J and watch some movies. And those are great things, too. And then that date that canceled on me, almost always finds their way back, you know? It's when I see people losing their minds because somebody's not interested in them or somebody has to cancel or someone stands you up, that's rude. But you can also just do other things with your life. And that's okay, too. You can just charge it to the game.
Right. I also feel like when somebody stands you up, it says more about them than it does about you, and you're Agreed. Potentially dodging a bullet.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, okay, well, that was flaky, so I guess I don't want to date somebody who's flaky in that way or somebody who's not going to respect my time in that way. That's fine, too.
Right.
I don't need to tell them that. I don't need to write a 4-page letter about how angry I am and how I wasn't trying to date you in the first place.
You hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So we're going to see each other in a little less than a month. We're going to see each other at Southwest Love Fest.
Yeah, we are.
I am curious what you are talking about.
I've actually been really cagey about bringing it up because it's not finished yet. And,
okay.
And oh no, I'm going to bring it up because it's you asking. Because it's you asking.
Thank you.
But I'm still working on names and everything, but like polyamorous insights that can help every relationship. I feel like the existence of multiple partners is a source of information, or not just partners, the existence of multiple attractions. It's information, you know, where if I'm into two people and like, all right, well, this person is treating me a way, and I realize, wow, I like the way that this person is treating me, I'd like to incorporate that further into my life. That's an expected outcome in a non-monogamous situation. Mm-hmm. If I'm in a monogamous situation, I can't see past the threat. I can't see past the betrayal. You know, the possibility of betrayal that multiple attractions might cause. And so I'm not getting the same level of information, or I'm not accepting the information, you know? So I want to talk about that because I realized my short stint in monogamy, like it wasn't short back in the day, but it feels short now, 20 plus right. years into my polyamorous adventure. During my short stint in monogamy, it felt like there were so many things missing in terms of communication, in terms of scheduling, in terms of emotional literacy, all things that I need, that polyamory requires, all stuff that I only learned because I had to be with multiple people and sort of figure out what my feelings were on a day-to-day basis or understand how I felt about my partners, how I felt about my bandwidth. A lot of this stuff is stuff that I only learned because I was sort of pushed to a limit by dating multiple people. And I feel like that's information that everybody wants and can benefit everybody. So I want to speak on that a bit.
Right. And that's a really great topic. And it begs a question, which is, does non-monogamy encourage or promote better communication and better communication skills, and consequently monogamy actually causes people to dull their communication skills or not sharpen or even be aware of the fact that they need to have these communication skills or, you know, even need to communicate in the first place. Because what I'm thinking is you're monogamous, you're in a monogamous relationship. You're like, this person ain't going nowhere. What do I need to say this thing for?
And I thought maybe it was just because I was young, like in my early 20s while monogamous, but nothing I've seen in the 20 plus years since has told me that people are having some of these conversations in terms of if I'm with somebody and we're monogamous, we're married, if we're going for the long term, there are times where I might feel more comfortable restricting my partner's autonomy because they're mine. Let's say my wife. If my wife flirts with some guy and I feel some sort of way about it, I know that she's not doing that to me. I know that she's just living her best life, you know, it has nothing to do with me. Right. And that's something that I've got to feel about it. I might want to say, hey, can you not do that around me? Because that makes me feel a way. But I can't just be like, nah, don't, because that's her life. Whereas if I'm monogamous, I could just be like, yo, no, don't. And that's the whole conversation. We don't have to discuss my feelings. I don't have to discuss what the relationship looks like going forward because the relationship looks the way my parents' relationship looked, you know? The relationship looks the way my favorite sitcom looks. Like, I grew up on Brady Bunch, Growing Pains, all of that. That's what relationships look like, and that's what's in my head. I don't have to intentionally craft it, but if I'm queer or if I'm polyamorous or if I'm outside of the normativity, I've got to craft that relationship myself. I don't have the same amount of modeling. You know, my parents aren't polyamorous. They don't even like that I am.
I mean, there's also the sense that that modeling is flawed in a lot of ways. You know, one thing that always kind of sticks in my head is the whole mine, yours, property, or as property piece.
Yeah.
Which even when I thought I was monogamous, I had a problem with and just was not able to articulate what the problem was until I became polyamorous, which is just that I'm not anybody's property and I don't want anybody to be my property.
Yeah, that sounds exhausting too.
Right. And for me, it's on some lazy shit. It's just like, I don't want that responsibility.
Yeah.
But it's funny now, even now, whenever someone's like, oh, that's my girl or that's my man, I'm like, they don't belong to you. And that makes me cringe a little bit.
Like, I'll say that as a shorthand, but in longer conversations, there's never going to be an indication that I feel entitled to or in ownership of any of my people. They're their own people doing their own things. And I know there are times where, like, I read a lot of Reddit stories. I've been drowning myself in a lot of r/relationship and am I the asshole stories. Yeah. And there are so many times where I see people losing their shit because my boyfriend follows a bunch of Instagram models. And I'm sitting there thinking, why is that even an issue? But if I'm in a monogamous relationship, my partner can be like, well, this is an issue for me, so just stop. Whereas if I'm polyamorous, nobody could tell me that. I could say, if you have an insecurity, I can offer you some reassurance in the stability of our relationship. If you need to speak to a professional about your viewpoint here, I will support it and I'll hear what your results are. I'll listen to the conclusions of all of that. But you're not going to just restrict my autonomy because it makes you sad. Right. If that's the case where the answer is restrict my autonomy or be forever sad, then maybe we shouldn't be together. But if I'm in a monogamous relationship, someone might feel just comfortable saying, yeah, just don't do that. Or just cut off, you know, like, oh, well, you have a thing that your ex gave you and now you have to throw it in the trash. Yeah. I saw a story recently where guy was a widower. And it some years had passed. He moved on. He's engaged to marry a new woman. And she's like, well, I know that you have that box of your ex-wife's stuff. You need to, like, get rid of it. Don't put it in a box and hide it. Don't put it in a safety deposit box. You've got to destroy this. Otherwise, I don't think you're ready to move on with your life.
Yo.
And I'm sitting there thinking, yo, you're jealous of a corpse. That's a you problem.
Hey, I hear that and I'm just like, red flag, red flag.
Yeah. And, you know, the update said that that relationship ended because he wasn't just going to, like, destroy his not even an ex-wife. Not like they got divorced. They didn't have a breakup. She died, you know? And so as a result, that relationship ended because he didn't feel like honoring his current relationship meant dishonoring his previous one.
Right move.
Nor should
whoever you are.
Yeah.
That's crazy. These insights, I think, are so valuable and important. And I think I asked you this question the last time we spoke one-on-one, so I'm going to ask you again.
If everything goes right with Southwest Love Fest, if I'm really feeling it, that's going to end up being the next book.
I love it.
Because I'm doing this workshop at Southwest Love Fest, and then a couple weeks later, I'm doing it again for Shebop out in Portland. I'm doing an online class for them. And if I'm feeling comfortable with it, if I feel like I've got a flow in terms of the dialogue, and I'm already working on writing it, so that'll end up being the next thing.
Right on.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back to something that you were talking about earlier, which is sort of like the body conversation, kind of locker room talk, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
How do you demarcate when shit gets, goes off script? Like, how do you draw that line?
A lot of it ends up being like, how much of this would my partner have a problem with hearing?
Mm.
You know, there was a point where me and my man, Pat, we got really good about speaking about our relationships using exclusively basketball references. And if my partners heard me talking about that, they'd roll their eyes about it, but they wouldn't be like, Kev, I'm really uncomfortable with the conversation you're having. Like, I've had some adventures, and, you know, I've had to tone it down when relaying that to other people. But just being able to have a, you know, this is what's going on kind of conversation is useful, and also helps you get other people's perspectives. But also, we never speak about our people, even when talking body, even when talking nasty. We never get to the point of disrespectful, you know? Mm. Like, hey, if I'm fucking somebody's face, cool. I don't have a problem with this person. You better not talk shit about this person. I am respecting their, I am respecting their sexuality even while fucking their face. Right. We're good here, you know? I don't talk shit about my partners, and I don't let people talk shit about my partners, and I don't let people talk shit about their partners. That's not something I want to hear. And thankfully, I've got a friend group where that's not really a concern, you know?
I think that's super important.
Yeah. If there's a concern, it's a relationship concern. And then we're not talking sexy shit. We're talking supportive friendship, you know? And that's a different type of conversation.
Yeah, I feel like when I think about locker room talk, or what people would term guy talk or whatever it is, there's a point where, and I'm thinking back to when I was a teenager and in my 20s and all that kind of stuff, where shit would get disrespectful. And it's not like you're just talking in a way about the stuff that you did or the stuff that you're doing that is complimentary to your partner. It's like insulting to your partner.
Yeah.
And I think that's where things get a little muddy. And frankly, thankfully, I don't really spend time around people that have that kind of vibe anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
But I know it's out there.
Yeah, of course. Like, I remember when Trump was running that first time and the conversation of locker room talk became a thing, he tried to pass off talking about non-consensual contact as just guys being guys.
Right.
And as a result, guys being guys became under attack, you know? When I'm sitting there thinking, my guys being guys moments don't include non-consensual contact.
Right.
Like, I've never had a friend have a conversation with me telling me about how he's cheating on his girl. Because even if he was doing that, and I don't think my friends do that, but if they were, that wasn't a conversation that they would feel comfortable having with us because we would tell them about themselves.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Now, when the Bill Cosby conversations were happening, I wasn't around those guys who were like, oh man, Cosby couldn't have done that. It's like, nah, dozens of people were saying he did it.
Right.
Dozens of people were saying he did it to them. Couldn't all of them been lying?
No, I agree. It's a hard thing, right? Because at the end of the day, I wasn't there. So I can't say exactly what happened. But if hundreds, and at this point it is hundreds of people, it's like hundreds of people have said that he did this. He has admitted to it.
Yeah.
There is a long trail of, I don't know if you watched the Kamau Bell documentary.
I did.
Okay. Where there's an episode of The Cosby Show where he talks about putting something in somebody's
barbecue.
Yes. The barbecue.
Yeah.
Sauce. There was him on a talk show in the 60s or 70s talking about Spanish Fly.
Yep.
Like all this other stuff. And it's like, all right, it's walking like a duck, talking like a duck. You know, it looks like a duck. It's a fucking duck.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and so there were conversations somewhere in America. There were conversations with cisgender black men talking about, man, he ain't do that. They weren't conversations they were having with me, though.
Right.
You know, if that was a conversation my friends were having in their barbershops, that wasn't a conversation that came to our little group session, because that wasn't the kind of talk we have, you know.
Right.
Like, yeah, we can mix it up. We can talk a little shit. Yeah, we can get a little irreverent. But we're not going to be disrespectful to the people that we like, the people that we love, the people that we want to be around. And we're not going to accept that of our peers either.
Right. And there's a way to discuss sex. There's a way to discuss lots of things without it being angry or dismissive of people or insulting towards other people.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can have these conversations and be dirty and whatever while still being respectful towards the people that you're fucking with.
Word. And that part is really important. Like, I remember there was an era of hip hop where people were talking about running trains a lot. Like, that was on everybody's album. I've run some trains before. But at the same time, everybody leaving there, we're not high-fiving over, you know, how disrespectful we were to somebody, you know, disrespectful in the bed in a consensual way, in a way that our partner was looking for. Yes. But in a ha ha ha, you know, we ran a train on this bitch. Those were never my conversations.
Right. And, you know, a lot of those records, a lot of those songs, it feels like the woman did not have any autonomy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're clearly treating the woman as a source of disrespect. It's not like, yeah, she got hers. She enjoyed it. We all had a great time, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like you said, we ran a train on this bitch.
Yeah. Like I said, last week, Friday, I was at an orgy. And at the end of it, I was like, this was wholesome. We all had a great time. There were a lot of lovely text messages after the fact. Like, hey, I had a great time with you last night. There's a lot of that.
You know, you're saying wholesome. I'm just thinking somebody put out pastries. There's cheese and crackers.
There were, in fact, cheese and crackers.
See, I mean, I've been like, fuck the sex. I'm going to just sit here and eat some cheese and crackers.
Sometimes that's the mood. I've been to a couple of events where it was just me with a drink in my hand, enjoying some conversations while people were fucking in the background. And that's fine, too.
That's right. Going back to the hip hop discussion, you know, you and I have had a couple of conversations about this, and being queer identified men who are hip-hop fans, and particularly hip-hop fans of a certain era. Like, this is much, very much pre Lil Nas X, Tyler, the Creator, whatever. And you could even include early Odd Future stuff in there as well.
Yeah.
Being such big fans, and hip-hop to me is like my culture. If I come from anything, from a cultural perspective, I come from hip-hop.
I feel the same.
Yeah. And how do you, particularly as you get older, balance some of the lyrics and artists you loved when you were young saying some shit that is clearly foul?
There's a lot of I fell in love with this when I was too young to know that carries, you know? Griselda is dope right now. And I remember a friend of mine was like, I don't listen to Griselda, because if I was going to listen to 90s coke rap, I would listen to coke rap that came out in the 90s. And that's how I feel about it. Like, not all of this stuff is still palatable to me, you know? Am I going to listen to Ghostface Killah's Wildflower? 100%.
Hell yes.
If Ghostface Killah dropped Wildflower today, I might... Oh, no, sorry. If some new young artist dropped Wildflower today, I might feel differently about it. But at the same time, I remember there was a lot of talk about homophobia in, like, 80s and 90s hip-hop. And a lot of the slang you only pick up by way of context clues.
Mm.
Like, every slang I've ever heard for weed, every slang I've ever heard for a gun, I only got because of context clues in the lyrics. And the F slur, whenever it popped up in hip hop, it was always referring to punks, not homosexual men. Like, every once in a while, there'd be a Brand Nubian song here or there.
Right. That's where my mind immediately went.
Yeah, very clearly. They are speaking about homosexuality, but nine times out of ten, if somebody was talking about gay shit, if somebody was throwing out the F slur, they were just talking about punks. They were just talking about guys they could beat down in a fight or lyrically. And so, as much hip-hop as I grew up on, the homophobia didn't carry for me. And then the misogyny didn't carry because the women around me were listening to the same songs, and they always had the same excuse, the same thing that Chris Rock said in that one special. He ain't talking about me. And as a result, a lot of that stuff washed off. So I saw Ice Cube in an interview a few years back when Straight Outta Compton was coming out. And a lot of the conversation, the critique of Straight Outta Compton was that it diminished the role of women who were there for those stories when they were occurring. And when Dr. Dre was interviewed about it, he gave really diplomatic answers. You know, this was the time period. This is how we felt back then. Right. And Ice Cube sounded like 20-year-old Ice Cube when he responded. And I remember thinking, I feel like this guy hasn't grown as much as he could have. He probably didn't have a lot of people around him telling him no, because he's been a star since he was like 19.
Right.
And it's a shame to hear him speak about this subject this way. And then I'm also still going to go and listen to Death Certificate. Both of these things are happening.
Right. That's another thing. I mean, I struggle, I think, similarly to you, or maybe in a slightly deeper way with some of that stuff. And I certainly agree that 90% of hip-hop records, if somebody says the word faggot, they're not talking about a homosexual. They are talking about, like, a punk. I mean, punk is often used as a synonym for homosexual as well, but they're talking about just somebody they don't like.
They're talking about rival drug dealers.
Right. Rival rappers, rival drug dealers, rival whatever. Right. They're not specifically targeting homosexual men. I think about that second Brand Nubian album, and I'm just like, man, I can't really listen to that shit. And the beat for fucking Punks Jump Up to Get Beat Down is so dope.
It is. And it's hard to fuck.
God.
Yeah. But then you get to that Lord Jamar verse.
Yeah.
And it's like, boy, he is not targeting punks.
No,
he's targeting gay men.
Yeah. Still problematic too, Lord Jamar is.
Boy, is he?
Yeah. You know, with the misogyny, again, I think there's a context that I personally apply to it. I think if it's witty, if it's done clearly with like wink wink tongue in cheek, I have a easier time dealing with it. But if it's something like bitches ain't shit but hoes and tricks,
that's what a different situation.
Right. And then I'm also like, you talking about Dre, like, this motherfucker threw a woman down a flight of steps.
Yep.
So you got to consider the messenger and consider the context.
This larger conversation in general about separating the art from the artist. And My take on it is really simple. I'm okay with people separating the art from the artist because I feel like we all do it to some extent.
Sure.
Just don't try to tell me that problematic shit isn't problematic. If that's your guilty pleasure, I get it. But don't try to tell me that problematic shit isn't problematic. And also, let's not tell each other how to feel about it. Where I know I've seen some racist shit that people enjoyed. Okay. Just don't try to tell me it's not racist.
Sure.
Just don't tell me that I should enjoy it.
Sure.
If you enjoy it and you acknowledge that it is what it is, I'm not going to beef with you personally. Someone else might, and that is their own standard to stand behind. But every once in a while, I'll see some shit that I think is funny, or there was a sort of fatphobic joke in a season of Cobra Kai that I thought was funny. I'm not going to tell fat folks how to feel about that joke. Whether you like it or not, that is up to you. I'm also not going to be like, no, that joke was fine. You're being sensitive. You're allowed to be upset with it. You're allowed to not fuck with it.
Those conversations are so nuanced and so frustrating a lot of times.
Yeah.
But I think your perspective is really solid. Like, you can't tell people how to feel about a certain thing. Like, if somebody is upset because Dave Chappelle made a series of jokes, they have every right to be upset about it. And I can empathize with them being upset about it. That doesn't mean necessarily that I shouldn't watch the Chappelle show and laugh. I'm not going to laugh at those jokes. But I'm also not going to tell you you should get over it or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know?
A lot of that stuff, when it gets to a certain place, it just becomes unfun, you know?
Yeah.
Where like the Chappelle stuff, like there might have been a point several years ago, like during the Chappelle Show era, there might have been a point where Chappelle could have slipped some problematic jokes by me and I'd have laughed and I would have just kept it moving.
Right.
But we're at a point with Chappelle and some of the people who are really supportive of him, or like a J.K. Rowling and Harry Potter, where that stuff just became unfun for me.
Right.
Like, if you still want to enjoy Harry Potter and, you know, and call yourself a Hufflepuff or what have you, I'm not going to beef with you about it. But like, it became unfun for me. It became unfun for me to watch the movies, to read the books, to like and listen to anything J.K. Rowling says. But I still have a lot of references to Harry Potter in my head that I speak in analogy. So every once in a while, like that stuff comes up. But yeah, it's some of that stuff just becomes unfun. Like I can't even go back and watch and enjoy Chappelle's show anymore because he's become such a transphobic train wreck.
Right.
You know,
I mean, you can remember the memory fondly. And it's like, yeah. You know, like I tell people all the time, like in my brain, Kanye died in a plane crash in like 2015.
Word.
And that is Kanye the only who? Way. Yeah. And that is the only way I can justify listen. And I haven't listened to College Dropout or Late Registration in a while, but it's the only way I can justify the strong feelings I still have about those records. Like it's not the same person.
Yeah. College Dropout, Late Registration, like all the way up to about Graduation. That's my era of Kanye.
Right.
And it's been a while since I've really been able to listen to it. Like Jesus Walks will come on and I'll skip it. Like it's still in my collection and it'll come on and I'll skip it because it just became unfun, you know. But if somebody else is still jamming to it, I'm okay with that. Just don't try to tell me like that Kanye is cool.
Right.
You know, like, he's not. He's proven that he's not. It's okay. Right. It's okay to still enjoy his music if you want to. I mean, for me, it's okay if you still want to enjoy his music. But don't lie to me about him.
Right, right. I understand what you're saying completely.
Yeah,
and agree with you.
Like R. Kelly, I fully support canceling R. Kelly, and I'll never buy another R. Kelly record.
I mean, I don't think we have to worry about there being any more R. Kelly records coming.
But like. But I've got one song, Step in the Name of Love. When Step in the Name of Love comes on, I'm grooving because it's still really dope. Everything else that he put out, I can't listen to. And he's just got one song for me.
Right. And there's, I mean, for the context, that's also the rare R. Kelly song that's not about fucking.
Yeah.
And it's hard to listen to any R. Kelly song about sex and not wonder who he was singing about having sex with.
Yeah, that's just gross.
Yeah, it is super gross.
Yeah.
On to happier topics, Kevin. You know, it's been a couple of years since, actually, I think our first one-on-one conversation was 2020.
Oh.
So there's been a fair amount of time that has passed. And, you know, you have kids who are now a bit older.
Word.
And how is that all looking for you? Like, how has life changed for you in the 4 years since we first sat down?
Yeah, when it's moving there. There's that saying, parenthood, like the days are long, but the years are short. That is the truest statement I've ever heard in terms of parenting. You know, my kids are 13 and 11 now. The 13-year-old is about to turn 14 in a couple of months, and their personalities are so big. When they were younger, I was like, you know, question everything, you know, even me. And that was good information. That was a good thing to tell them. And as they get older, that's going to be a good mindset for them to have. But as a parent, it's super annoying when they're questioning me when I just want them to do what I tell them to do sometimes.
Just do the damn thing.
Yeah. But just watching them learn and grow and find their own fandoms that I don't understand.
I mean, you're gonna throw something at me that I have no concept of whatsoever. I bet.
Yeah. Like every once in a while, my kid would be like, "Hey, like we watched the Five Nights at Freddy's movie when that came out a few months ago, and I didn't understand any of what I was seeing." And my 11-year-old, who was 10 at the time, just kept rattling off lore and lore and lore. The same way that I could do, if you put me in an X-Men movie, I could be like, yo, that's Cyclops. His real name is Scott Summers. Let me tell you about Cyclops. You know, like my kid is sitting there rattling off all this information about Five Nights at Freddy's, pointing out like details and stuff that I never would have spotted. Meanwhile, I don't know anything about this. And just watching them do that and find their own path, find their own friendships and stuff, it's amazing to see the way that they navigate it. They're so much better than I was at their age.
Are you ready for like adulthood / empty nesting?
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah,
whenever that happens, like So something about me is that like I find the joy in a lot of things. It's something that I like about myself. I find the joys in situation changes. So like say my part Southwest Love Fest. Mm-hmm. I'm going there with one of my partners. They're traveling with me, and I'm excited to be going with them to an event. And if they had to cancel at the last minute, I'd be excited to be going there by myself. There's a joy for either of those situations, and I like both of those situations. And that's, you know, I love being able to communicate with my kids. I love, you know, we just finished watching the recent Ghostbusters movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because the new one came out this week, and we're gonna go see that. You know, like I'm excited to watch, you know, these movies with my kids and spend time with them and hang out. But if they weren't around, I wouldn't even be talking to you. I'd be at the movie theater right now by myself, enjoying, you know, like eating popcorn out of a Ghostbusters trap, you know?
Oh my goodness.
I like both of those things. So I'm ready to be an empty nester. Granted, I've got several years before that, but like I'm enjoying it right now too.
That's what's up.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not a parent. And I'm projecting myself back into being a child and feeling like my caregivers couldn't wait until I got the fuck up out the house.
Yeah.
So I often wonder if, you know, parents as their children age are just like, senior year just started. We're counting down that time, you know.
I mean, more than anything, it's not so much about getting them out of the house. I want to get them prepared to get out of the house.
Mm.
I think about when I went off to college, there were ways I was prepared to leave and ways that I had to figure it all out on the fly. And I want to give my kids as much leeway or lead time in terms of like skills and responsibility and initiative so that when they're out of here, they can make their own decisions, make smart decisions and do well for themselves. Like even now at 45, when I have a big decision to make, a lot of times I ask myself the questions I think my mom would ask me if I told her I was doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And then I make sure I have all the answers that I would answer my mom. Granted, it's a conversation I'm not having with my mom. It's just a conversation I'm having in my head. But like, all right, well, my mom would ask me if I'm going to Canada, like my mom would ask me if I have my passport ready.
Passport, right.
Cool. I do have my passport. Let's go. You know, something simple like that. And I want to make sure that I give them that kind of info. I ask them the right kinds of questions. I give them the right kind of support so that when it's time for them to go out and do their own thing, they're only calling me for support, not because they need me to take the wheel.
Do you think parenting is particularly difficult?
I don't know. I have to do it. Like I'm a parent and I'm a responsible parent. Like I'm not someone who wants to just, I don't. I'm trying to formulate my thoughts here while also still speaking. I've never stopped to think about how difficult parenting is. Like there are definitely times that are rough. You know, there are times where my kids are fucking up, or there are times where I'm fucking up, or my wife is fucking up. And those are the difficult things. But in general, like it's just carving, it feels like I'm just carving out a relationship with my kids and teaching them the stuff that I feel like they should know. A lot of it doesn't feel hard. It just feels like what I'm supposed to be doing. The hard stuff is when my kids need more help than I could give them, you know, more help than I'm qualified to give them.
And at that point, I'm assuming, you know, this is when you rely on the village. I think we talked about that during our last conversation, too.
Yeah. Like one of my kids has struggles with their mental health, and I can only be so supportive in that regard. Like I can be as supportive as I can be, but like I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a mental health professional. So like at which point I've got to talk to my partners who understand these struggles better than I do. I've got to, you know, call professionals who understand what's going on better than I do. Like I can still be supportive in that way, but it's difficult to know that there's a fix and not have the hammer in your own hand.
Right. Yeah. Right. I feel like, you know, and you'd be able to answer this question better than I would, just knowing that there is someone in close proximity who does have the hammer.
Yeah.
Even if you're not the person, like you trust the person.
Yeah. And that part of it definitely helps, but there's still a twinge of, I wish I could be doing this. I wish I was solving this.
I feel that.
And a lot of that's masculinity shit.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. Yeah. All right. Final question. And this has nothing to do with most of the stuff that we've just discussed. I'm going to take it back to the beginning again.
All right. Let's do it.
How do you plan a good orgy? Aside from cheese and crackers.
You know, I don't. I wouldn't. Like, I'm like, if I'm going to plan an orgy, it's going to be a bunch of people who I already, I wouldn't plan like an orgy where people pay me money to come to a space that I've organized.
Sure.
If I'm going to have an orgy, it's going to be me and some friends at my house, or me and some friends at a house that we all know and come to on a regular basis. It's going to be people who I already have, like, you know, 4 or 5 people who I already have like a current sexual relationship with, or who have a sexual relationship with each other. It's going to be more like, hey, let's hang out in my place and watch movies and fuck. It's not going to be like, I'm planning a thing, let me make a Facebook, you know, an event page on Facebook or anything like that. Yeah.
All right. So naturally and obviously, having a network of sexy friends is super important in this particular case.
Yeah, no, it don't hurt. It don't hurt at all.
Right on, man. All right, I'm a hit.
I was really fortunate to catch up with Kevin in person at Southwest Love Fest, maybe just a couple of weeks after we recorded this episode. Had a great time. Kevin's talk about applying principles established in non-monogamy and applying them to any kind of relationship was so important. I hope that he publishes a paper or a book or something related to that. Again, it goes back to communication skills and wanting the best for yourself and your partner or your partners or your friends or your family or whoever, because communication skills need to be built sort of across relationships. So thank you, Kevin, for the time we spent together. Thank you, Kevin, for taking the time to be on this show. I'm happy to have you back for a 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th time. You just knock on the door whenever you want to talk, and let's do it up. You can find Kevin online. He is on Instagram at polyrolemodels, PolyroleModels, and you can also find him at kevinapatterson.com. Thank you again, Kevin, for being on the show. I really, really appreciate you, and I appreciate what you put in the world.
Thank you for listening to Detoxicity. I hope you found this particular episode interesting. And if you are new, I hope you go back and listen to all of the older episodes. Once again, my name is Mike Joseph. I am the host and producer of this show. And there are a lot of things that you can do to continue to support our mission, continue to support this podcast. Follow me on social media. I am on Instagram, Twitter, and I'm on TikTok as Detox Pod Guy. You can also send me an email if you'd like. I'm at detoxpod@gmail.com. I am always on the hunt for people with interesting, inspirational, and powerful stories. So if you know somebody who fits that bill, or if you yourself fit that bill, please don't hesitate to drop me a line via email or via social media. Please make sure you subscribe on your podcast platform that you're listening to this on. Rate, comment, help a brother out, help us move up in the rankings, follow me on social media, like I said, follow our Patreon, or subscribe to my Patreon, actually, patreon.com/detoxicitypod. You get access to exclusive episodes, you get episodes a little earlier than the general public, you get a cool-ass sticker, lots of stuff. Once again, patreon.com/detoxicitypod. Quick shout-out to Calvin Williams for providing the music and doing his magic on the logo, which was originally designed by Jacob Block. I thank you all for listening. I wish you all the best. Please take care of each other. Till next time, peace.